Everybody's sick.
Yeah, I'm going to die. What is up, everyone? I'm Ryan from Fireside Yankees. We've got the whole lineup back. Jacob was activated off the injured list. Still recovering a little bit. He was, you know, I think we're all, I'm not going to lie, getting through this intro, I thought I was going to cough like as soon as I said, what's up, everybody? So we've got a good bit to talk about. We've got we got some wrinkles in the Bellinger contract we're going to talk about, let Jacob kind of give his reaction there. We're going to talk a good bit about the bench situation. I know there's a lot of like smoke around whether it's a right-handed outfielder, right-handed first baseman. We'll talk about our preferences there because we're all sickos and we have an in-depth understanding of a 33-year-old right-handed hitter who might give you like an extra 0.4 wins across the year. And we'll also talk about how we feel about this offseason. Is this team a World Series contender or do they suck? Nothing ever good happens and will they win 70 games? We're going to talk about all that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. We'll start with Jacob because we have not heard from him on this podcast in 2 weeks. Jacob, how you doing and how you feeling, my friend?
I mean, I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. I battled with the flu last week and I won, and I'm currently battling with bronchitis. I think I'm close to taking it down. Might cough a few times in this pod, but I'm ready to get back into it. I'm ready to talk some Yanks.
Yeah, Chris, how we doing, my man?
I'm healthy, and I'm really excited to have Jacob back. I miss Jacob. It's cool doing the pod with Ryan, too. But these two missed each other so much. They basically did like a 15-minute pod before the show started, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, we were already in the weeds about
they were riffing about Seattle, about pitch mix, about righties versus lefties, what the bullpen needs. They did a full 15-minute show before we recorded. I mean, they're elite.
Yeah, we got into a heated coughing match, too, because we're going to see who coughs more. Okay, let's actually get it in now. Who coughs more, Jacob or myself, in this podcast?
It's going to be me.
I think Jacob agree. Is a little bit more sick than you, Ryan.
It's going to be me, dude.
I think I'm going to put like hypothetical money on this. I'm gonna be. I gotta save some bucks. It's Valentine's
like
Day coming up.
-2,000 to cough more.
No, not minus. It's like Jacob -330.
Yeah, dude. I can't. I'm a terrible bettor. And I'm also very emotionally invested to winning. So like the same way, like if the Yankees like lose 10 straight, I'm pretty emotional. Mm-hmm. I lose a bet, I'm pretty emotional. I'm pretty upset at myself, man. I'm not the type of person like, oh, this stupid athlete. Like I think if you DM athletes after a bet, you're the biggest loser on planet Earth. Yeah. But I go back and go, wow, I'm an idiot. I don't even know the game. Like, I should retire.
I gotta stop betting for a little bit. I bet that on the Walt Disney earning call they would say the word buyback this morning.
You can't be doing that malarkey.
Thought I had.
I've had my January was one of my best sports betting months of my life. I was up like $400 or something. I was cooking on college football, NFL, UFC. I was cooking. So I was happy in that sense. But they had to punish me for winning too much by infecting me with whatever illness I've been battling for the last 2 weeks. So that was the comeuppance I got.
I think I would trade good betting luck for like getting sick for like a stretch. Depends. It depends on what it is. I don't know. There has to be a certain sum of money. Like it has to be at least $200. I hate being sick. It is awful. And
dude, I would pay $1,000 to never have the flu again.
I agree.
I'm not trading my betting luck for an illness.
And there's like data that shows that men actually like, I know there's the meme out there is like men when they're sick, they act like they're dying and compared to like women. Data actually indicates that we feel our sicknesses more. Like, there's actually research done on that. It's pretty crazy.
The fact that our very own Ryan Garcia wants to let us know the data suggests that men
No, dude,
feel
I had this conversation. No, this
it's
came
perfect.
Up with you, my girlfriend
you're the data
randomly.
Guy. No, I love it. You're the data guy.
Absolutely.
No, this is like a little bit too close to like those like Manosphere podcasts now.
You're right. I had to
like
really
the data says men have it harder than women.
It's like, dude, it's like the person who's going to tell you that getting kicked
Ryan,
in the balls.
Chris and Jacob.
It's the person who tells you getting kicked in the balls is worse than giving
I've been
birth to a child.
Recently. I did a thing where I break my shins to get taller.
Yeah, dude.
I honestly, at some point, there might be a time where I consider it. We'll see.
No, there is not.
Bro, dude, I can't do it, man. Bro,
you have a girlfriend.
Yeah, this and is legit a
that's this whole, is not about that's... the girlfriend. You think it's about looks? I want to throw 90, bro. You know how easy it is to throw 90 when you're like 6 foot something?
But you still have, you have the leg surgery. Arms.
Ah, you're right. Yeah.
Okay. You're leg surgery, arms? You got to hobble around for like 3 no, years before you can
long,
move.
You're going to have long legs. You're going to lose your any athleticism. And yeah, then
you're
going to
have long shins. What
so what you're saying is take steroids. Is that where take steroids? Okay. All right.
When in doubt, roid it out.
Like, I'm being serious, bro. Like, throwing 90 is like a lifelong dream of mine. Like, I want to get there one day. I want to get there. I need to get there.
It's like me. This is I have this bit with my friends. Every time we're at the gym, I'm like, well, I gotta get in shape for spring training this year. They're gonna call me.
I think you could actually. We should. Yeah. I think if we were to like
I'm only 24. It could happen.
If we were to radar gun everybody, I think you would be throwing the hardest.
I don't know. I haven't.
Chris, have you clocked recently?
I haven't clocked. But I don't know how often Jacob throws.
I haven't thrown in years, bro. Last time I threw like
consistently. Oh, well, I throw 4 times a week.
What?
Really?
I throw all the time.
No, I don't throw. I just lift.
So I think I might put my money on Chris then.
If I lift and throw. Now I'm not like throwing particularly hard. Like I have a little brother that I play catch with all the time and then throw BP to.
Yeah. But... No, if I did like a 6 week or 8 week like build up with the arm, I could probably get to like mid 70s.
You're getting the nastiest 58 mile per hour fastball you have ever seen in your life from me. I'm promising you that right now.
Like I did a YouTuber baseball game thing a few years ago, and like Eric Kingajuko was there and he had his pocket radar and we did pull downs at the like before the game started. I think I got like 78 with a crow hop or something like that. But that was like putting all of my body into it. And I've been throwing with my buddy at college for like a couple of months leading up to it. So I don't know if I'm getting like I might get to the 70s if I had some build up, but I never was able to throw that hard.
I also couldn't throw hard, but I actually find that very impressive. I think we're going to have to I want to know what the viewers think about who could throw the hardest just based on our this area.
Hey, I'm down to do this as a challenge this spring. Once give the snow melts, I'm down to go out there and start throwing.
Okay, so from six, you want to we'll hash it out more clearly maybe over text, but I'll take the next like 8 weeks of training. I'm blowing the radar gun off. I'm gonna get signed because of these next 8 weeks of training.
We're all training. When's our target date? Opening day? Like
yeah. I mean,
if there wasn't a foot of snow on the ground, I'd say opening day, but like maybe we'll have to push it back to like March or May 1st.
Okay. Memorial Day. Let's do Memorial Day. All right, Memorial Day. And then on Memorial Day, I'll have to quit the podcast because the team will sign me. That's how hard I'll throw. the Colorado Rockies are gonna be like, yo, oh whoa.
Yeah.
We need you in our bullpen tomorrow. But
We need those low IVB arms.
What a crazy intro. What are we
dude, this might be one of the funniest intros we've ever done. It's just us talking about our velo.
Yeah, we went from Manosphere to velo to who's getting signed.
Yes. This is just where we're at. This is the point of the offseason.
You know what it is? It's we had months and months of just like speculation what we could do, and now we pretty much know what this roster is. And I was kind of saying like everyone was all pissed about like, oh, the Yankees aren't making moves, but I was like, for the pod, this is a good thing. We just like the speculation is what drives it. And now we don't have anything to talk about until the season actually gets started.
Okay, what? How many belly pods did we do? What's the over under?
every single one I've been a part of has
they're
had
terrible. Look, we're gonna talk about Bellinger a little bit here, but it's actually in a way that I find is kind of interesting. And it's that luxury tax hit. Dude, this guy's getting bread in the like he's killing our luxury tax the next few years. Let me get the exact payroll table up here on FanGraphs. This is via roster resource, so this is the source I'm using for this information. Cody Bellinger is going to make $42.5 million this year, $42.5 the next year, $25.8, $25.8, $25.9. So it's very front-loaded. I don't know. Where's the luxury? I don't know if they have luxury tax payments I can easily accessibly find, but they do have the luxury tax payroll. It's at $330 million. This is a franchise high. It has never been this high in the history of the New York Yankees franchise, which I also think is pretty insane to think about. Jacob, we'll start with you, man. How do you feel about this contract? I know you weren't able to react to it initially with myself and Chris. How do you feel about the contract? And, like, yeah, like, Rip, man, what do you think about this deal?
So I did a Bellinger video, like I was working on it right when he signed, and I like had to rush. I finished it and put it out like a few hours after he signed a couple of weeks ago. And I think this is pretty much what I was expecting him to get. I think he kind of got all the fixins with his with his opt-outs and such, but like the signing bonus is front-loaded, so he has a chance if he has two really good years to opt out and make a higher AAV than was expected for most people. But I think it's a pretty good deal for both sides. The way I see Bellinger, like, I don't know if he'll repeat what he did this past year. He was a 5-WAR player. Like, that's I wouldn't bank on that being what he does in the future. But I think the bat could stay where it is, especially playing in the Bronx. I think it's a perfect fit stadium-wise. I think the improvements we saw from him in left field, like, he played that left field so well. And it's so tough to find someone to play the Yankee Stadium left field like that. And I'm not expecting him to enter his 30s and continue that level. But if he's just an above average, like, he's not going to be Garner out there and play great left field defense into his mid-30s. But if he's just a plus left fielder for us, that's definitely worth it with, a 115, 120 WRC plus bat. That's a really good player right there. And it's like, maybe it is an overpay. But as we've seen this offseason, you have to overpay for talent. Tucker's making, like, $65 million this year. Bichette's making, like, the same amount as Bellinger this year. So I think... odds are he probably won't opt out after his age 32 season, but I don't know. I think it's a good deal for both sides, especially if he's around maybe slightly below the level he was this past year over these next few seasons.
I'm just about the same place. I do want to ask, because Ryan and I talked about it, and Sam on the Fireside Baseball podcast, who do you think is a better player, Jacob? Bellinger or Bregman?
I'd say... I don't know. I think it's tough. I think it's very fit dependent because both of their swings are very dependent on pulling fly balls. I think Bellinger is a better fit for us. I think he's a better player with the Yankees. I'd say they're probably about the same tier. I'd say Bellinger got more money. Because Bregman has had a lot of injury issues recently. Yeah. And I feel like I trust Bellinger.
Yeah, I guess I'm just asking because, like, I think that, like, this free agency, like you said, you were going to have to go to a place of uncomfortable or, like, slight overpay to, like, sign guys. And we kind of saw Boston, like, not go to that place with Bregman, and obviously they lost him. And so, for me, it's like, okay, like, you get Bellinger, who I think is a better player. I would trust more, like you said, than a Bregman for, you know, less. And so, I like the deal, generally speaking. I've given my thoughts plenty on this. But
I think also the Bregman is, like, the exact same – fit for Boston that Bellinger is for us, like in terms of needs and in terms of ballpark, it's like the same equivalency.
No, I'd agree. Yeah. Boston wasn't willing to like get a little bit uncomfortable to keep him.
Yeah, and I think that was a total mistake because as you see, their lineup looks pretty damn weak right now, and it's like they definitely need that middle of the lineup third base bat that they traded away last offseason or last regular season and then let walk this offseason. So I definitely think we were in the right for keeping Belly, even if it was a bit of an overpay.
And I'll also say this, and I kind of want to get what you guys think about this. The luxury tax hit, it's only $24.3 million from the last 3 years. The first 2 years is $44.75. I kind of like the deal structured that way, where when he's going to become a nuisance for this payroll, most likely, it's not going to be like the kind of nuisance that kills your roster. You know what I mean? I prefer paying a lot more in the short term than over like 7 years. And I really was against the idea of going to a seventh year. I think I was hesitant for a sixth year, but you kind of had to do what you could do to get this deal done because it's not like this free agency had like an alternative that I really like loved. I did not believe Bo Bichette was a better standalone signing than Bellinger for the Yankees specifically. I don't know, man. I think this was the guy you had to get, and he's here, and he's going to be here with a lot of money over the next 5 years. Jacob, any final thoughts you have there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we want it to be stuck in another DJ LeMahieu situation. So I think I do prefer the front-loaded cost of this contract. So I agree with you guys.
And again, you're trying to win a World Series, right? I don't think we can both do this podcast with the conversation of, man, I really wish Hal... We had an entire conversation about, hey, the Blue Jays are going to outspend you, man. You can't let that happen. Well, that didn't happen, and I don't think it will end up happening this winter. So that's something... Like, I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to complain about, man, they need to spend more money and then go, they spent $5 million more on this team that I would have wanted them to. That's like, I don't know. It just feels like complaints to complain at that point, right? Yeah. If you aren't somebody who thinks like the payroll just needs to get higher and higher and you're like, hey, this payroll is too high for the roster, like that's fine. I just, for the way I view baseball and an owner's role in baseball, I'm never going to complain about the payroll being too high as long as the team produces.
Yeah, I think the only time that I would ever complain would be if a move, if I think there's a bad contract that prevents us from signing somebody else that I want. But in this case, like, Bellinger was the last piece that we needed for this offseason.
It was Bellinger, like, or nothing else. It wasn't like they were signed Framber Valdez. And also say this.
It's like, if we still want to go out and get another platoon bat or a one-year reliever, like, they're going to go do it. It's not, they're not going to let a few million dollars prevent them from that.
Yeah, and one other note is the only other situation is if you are rebuilding and you make a move to go over the luxury tax while you're not trying to win a World Series. That, I would say, is pretty stupid, but that does not apply to the Yankees right now. They're not, a few million dollars from being completely resetting their luxury tax, and B, they're not trying to rebuild. So, not applicable here. Chris, any final thoughts you have on Bellinger before we move on?
No, I mean, just, you know, it's done. He's a Yankee, and I agree. Like, everything you guys have echoed, everything you guys have said, I kind of echo. Like, you'd rather kind of the short-term uncomfortable rather than long-term uncomfortable. I mean, you got the good player, and, you know, I know a lot of people are complaining about, like, not getting better, but, like, you're running back the best offense in baseball a year ago, and I think that's okay.
And honestly, like, I considered going to this maybe a little bit later, but I think this just might be the right time to do it, and we'll get into bench bats a little bit later. Let's talk about this offseason, because it has been the returning of the offense, the addition of Ryan Weathers, and some, like, depth bullpen slash swing starter arms, you know, the some project pieces. Like, there's been a lot of projects added and a lot of retaining. What do you guys feel about this offseason? Do you feel as if retaining last year's team is good enough, or do you think, hey, they left some meat on the bone here? I think they could have and should have done more to make this a contender. Chris, we'll start with you. Like, does this offseason at all satisfy you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think you're going to go into this opening day in a better spot than you were on last opening day. And one thing, obviously, that I think Cash has done a really good job with is if there's an opportunity to get better at the trade deadline, they always will. So I think naturally you're better, even if you don't consider the projects, I think you're better this opening day than you were last opening day. And then additionally, if just one of the project hits, you feel really good. Like, if Weathers hits or, like, 80% hits, it's like you feel really good about where you're at. I mean, you're not going to have Cookie or Stroman, you know, making starts for you. You're not going to have Pablo Reyes playing third. Like, there's no looming DJ LeMahieu kind of in the wings. Like, there's none of that. And right now, instead of talking about, like, you know, what are we going to do at second base and third base, which is what we were doing a year ago at this point of the offseason, we're talking about, okay, what bench bats can we add? So, I feel good. And again, like, if just one of the projects hits, all of a sudden it's like, oh, shoot, like, we're in a really, really good place. I mean, dude, think about it. Like, Max Fried's first start last year, I think we had, Pablo Reyes make three errors playing third base, and Max Fried wasn't eligible for a win. Like, that's the kind of, like, disgusting stuff we were dealing with. Now, there was also a lot of reason to be excited last year. Max Fried and Cody Bellinger, that kind of thing. But you got that same kind of core back, and then also a couple of projects that I think could hit. So I feel good about where we're at. I'm not one of the crash dummies out there.
Yeah, I agree with every point you just made. I think the whole idea of running back pretty much the same skeleton of this roster, but you're elevating the floor, mm-hmm. where you don't have to give a few dozen starts to really bad pitchers. You don't have to give 50 or 100 games to really bad third baseman. Like, people have been talking about McMahon making $15 million, about how that's an overpay, or Austin Wells. Like, people want to upgrade from Wells. People want to upgrade from McMahon. And it's like, these guys are at the very least average players. Like, yeah. Ryan McMahon is the second best defender at third base of this decade so far. Like, and his bat fits the park. He's average with a higher than average floor or ceiling. So the whole idea of there's no true, like, one weak point on this roster, and there's a lot of places that project to be around average that could be better, and really it's unlikely that they're going to be worse than average. So this team's got one of the highest floors in all of baseball, and it's also got a really high, like, 95 plus win ceiling. So I'm happy with it. I'd say it's probably a B+ offseason overall.
Yeah, people complaining about McMahon, but, like, McMahon's going to play great defense and for you and hit 20 home runs this year easy. So it's like, if that's the one thing you want to complain about, awesome. But I'm buying all the stock I can to McMahon this year. I'm really excited about him this season.
And I'll also say this when it comes to the offseason, and I think that we have to kind of step back for a second. The Yankees needed a left fielder. I think they needed a center fielder. They also internally believe they needed a center fielder, but I thought they needed one. I have like a clip of me saying, I don't want Bellinger to come back and be the starting center fielder. He's got to be the starting left fielder. They needed a starting pitcher. They needed some bullpen support, and they needed bench bats or a bench bat from the right-handed side. Mm-hmm. In left field, they got the second best player you could get on this market, trade or free agency, Cody Bellinger. In center field, I think they got arguably the best player that changed teams. I mean, you could argue, like, I don't, the only player I'd even like hear an outside argument for is Luis Robert, because Luis Robert I really think highly of, but even then, you can't sit here and tell me that Luis Robert is a much safer bet than Trent Grisham, or that you can guarantee that you could have traded for him. That's another part of this conversation. I don't think Bader's a better player than Trent Grisham. I don't really think Bader was a great fit for this team. He doesn't really hit lefties that well, and hasn't for the last few years, and it's not like the underlings are good in those matchups either. I think they got the best center fielder they could. I think they got the second best left fielder they could. I don't think Ryan Weathers was one of my 5, 6, or 7, or 8 best starting pitchers that I really wanted, but when you start looking at the ones who got moved, I don't think... Is Ryan Weathers fundamentally different from Tatsuya Mai in terms of upside, age, projection, the reason why you acquire them, etc.? Like, the only difference is that Ryan Weathers doesn't sell you tickets the way that Tatsuya Mai does. Am I crazy for saying that?
Well, he's probably got better upside, right, if he stays healthy.
I'm just saying, like, the play that Ryan Weathers is,
he's an uncertainty
that has insane upside because of the stuff.
Yeah,
the only difference is that Imai is going to make you more money. Like,
yeah,
that's
what you're saying. My bad. I misunderstood it.
I think Imai, I would assume Imai has a higher floor than him, but who knows, with based on how teams have been perceiving Imai this offseason, who knows if they trust him to stay healthy or to be a productive starter, seeing as he has incentives to throw 80 innings. Like, it's definitely
so
a bit concerning. So I think you're right that Weathers is a very close comp to Cabrera, too, if you ask me. So it's like there really isn't, like, you could maybe a Gore would have been a better.
I think Gore is like if Ryan Weathers just, there's just more security. I think he's a better version of Ryan Weathers.
But he is also somewhat of a project because he's never been good for a full season. He's always great through May or June, and then he falls off. So it's like you still had something to work on with him.
Look,
I'm looking at the... Like, our outfield was the biggest need, obviously, going into this offseason, given that Bellinger and Grisham were free agents. And we got two of the top three outfielders on the market. Even though they return, they're returning players, like, we got two of the top three. So it's like, I don't know what else people want.
And, like, seeing the outfielder market, like, at first, Trent Grisham, like, accepting the QL, I'm like, ah, goodness gracious. But then, like, seeing what outfielders got, it's like, oh, like, that's a very good deal for one.
I'll also say this. You know, the other two areas are more supplemental. That's the bench and the bullpen. The bench, Rosario checks the box for me. I think that if they do not add another bench bat, I'm not going to be upset. But if they do, that they get an A-plus for their bench. I think their bench will be one of the best in baseball. I think they get like a B-plus A for the outfield. Like, the only reason I'm not 100% sure on the A is because, like, you paid Bellinger $44 million for this year in the luxury tax. Like, that's not a great contract. I gotta weigh the contract a little bit, but I think the Grisham contract is kind of a home run, so maybe I do give him an A. The rotation, I'll give them like a C+. I think Weathers makes you better, but it's not like an insane upgrade. And the bullpen, I'm going to give, that's where I'll give them like a D. Like, I don't think they did enough for the bullpen, and maybe they end up adding another reliever, but they need work there, in my opinion. Point is, like, you average all this out, and you get like a B-ish. B+, somewhere in that range. I'm not saying that that's the winning the offseason, but it's not bad. I'll take it. Like, I think for the kind of offseason it was, it got a little bit too much bad PR for what it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it. Everyone was up in arms in December, early January, because we hadn't made any moves, but our main targets were still there. And then we ended up getting pretty much everything we could have asked for out of this offseason. And that was after everyone complained that we lost out on so-and-so, or we weren't making any moves. It's like, just be patient. There's still guys out there. And even now, there's still, like, the last few things we need. We can still go sign a Justin Wilson. Who knows? That's my pipe dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they get, like, if they get a Justin Wilson adjacent reliever, or Justin Wilson himself, like somebody in that category of relievers in terms of how good I think they are, then I think this is a really good offseason, because I think the bullpen does get, because then all those project guys become project guys behind an actual, like, safety net addition, which I think recontextualizes it. It's kind of like, I talked about this with Elmer's role with Chris last week. Elmer Rodriguez's role on this roster becomes far more exciting by just pushing him down the depth chart by one spot, because he goes from oh shit, he is the best starter you have if somebody gets hurt too. He's a guy who can fight for a spot and win a job if he looks really good. And if he doesn't look really good, hey, he can go to AAA. And even if he does look really good, he can still go to AAA. That's way better than the other scenario. With like a Cade Winquest. Like Cade Winquest can fall in the bucket of, yeah, he can pitch a little bit in April, or maybe doesn't even get out of spring training. Or like a Chivilli, you know, you just option him if he doesn't look good. If he looks great, awesome. You've got, like, I think Yeri's kind of underrated in all this because he's not even on the projected roster, and he's an optionable reliever who was competitive at the big league level. Like, there were times where I was like, yeah, put Yeri Dos Santos in this sixth inning with a one-run lead. Like, I'm cool with it. Point is, like, I think just pushing everybody down one of the depth chart after Cruz slash Doval, or maybe after Bednar. After Bednar is ideal, but I understand it might not be the case. That just makes you feel good about the bullpen. And again, if you upgrade everywhere somewhat meaningfully, how can you be upset at the team? I don't think you should be against running it back because the team didn't win a playoff series. I think you should get the best players you can. And Grisham and Bellinger were the second and third best outfielders I thought you could get this winter. So,
and on the Rodriguez Cruz front, just real quick, like if you like the feeling of not having to rush somebody because it's not out of need, I think it's really important. And I'm expecting to see him at some point this year, but like the fact that they won't have to rush him because they did add where they needed, I think is a very helpful note, maybe long term.
Pitching in the World Baseball Classic too, alongside Austin Wells, playing for my country, the greatest baseball team ever fucking assembled, the Dominican Republic, in the World Baseball Classic. I almost said the Spanish version of the country, but I'm gonna be honest with you, man, I'm gonna totally butcher it and cough on myself. I don't know what it is. Like, I felt the cough come up. I was like, oh, I'm gonna like cough straight into this microphone. So. Yeah, WBC
like,
stuff there.
Isn't Albert Abreu like your ace this year?
Luis, okay, actually, Albert Abreu being on the roster is not as bad as Luis Severino being on the roster. Luis Severino stinks, and we're going to have to pitch him. No, he sucks.
I still love Sevy.
Dude, if Luis Severino starts a do-or-die game, I'm done. Like,
it's not his fault. He had to pitch in that AAA park in Sacramento this year. He's still got it.
Launching pad.
If 2.5
F4 this year.
No, timeout. If you took his strikeout rate and you like put it into a decimal point, I'm pretty confident you could drive with that blood alcohol content level. Like, I'm like fairly. Actually, I don't know the laws around that.
I don't think you could drive with a 17% blood alcohol content.
No, Ryan. It would be what? 0.170?
You're talking about, okay. Yeah,
I said if it turns to a decimal point.
0.176. That's still like that's like over twice the legal.
Oh,
limit.
Shit. Yeah, it's 0.0. Oh, shit.
I don't know what type of drunk driving you've been doing recently. But.
No, I never. I'm a strict. If I have a beer, I'm not driving. I'll give myself one beer, but not two. Sorry. I'm not a, if it's a, like a fun drink, like if it's a drink that like the name is like Sex on the Beach, I'm not driving after that. that's my rule, essentially. I think that's like a good way to measure it. You know,
I love this dude. I love Ryan.
And I can say this stuff now. I'm 21. This is great,
dude. We're deep into the off season,
dude. Just
dude, we are in the.
It's a deep off season. Pop. They were reporting like what?
God, dude, we were reporting like a week
yeah,
and a half.
Like, I think nine days.
Yeah,
pitchers, 9 days.
The cool thing about all this too. The really cool thing about all of this is. We're going to get like a month of baseball and there's going to be a couple of weeks where it's just like hype and shit. Mm-hmm. And then there's just going to be the doom and despair week where we get like two to three injuries, or the first
like,
boom
like,
conference.
Like last year when Cole went down, when it was announced that, remember that there's like a 2-day window where everyone knew he was hurt, but it wasn't official that the TJ was coming.
I remember
like the longest 48 hours of my life, dude.
I remember Brian Hoke dropping that tweet and I was baking. This is, I can't even say this. I'm thinking about Keon Coleman. I was baking cookies in my girlfriend's house and we're baking cookies. It's like late at night. We're just having a good night, man. Like it was a really nice night. And I see that Brian Hoke tweet. He's scheduled to get an MRI on his elbow. And I just stand there like in complete disbelief. I was like, she's like, you okay? Like, somebody die? I'm like,
basically.
Yeah, basically.
I think a very underrated aspect of how Cashman's built the roster since Soto left is he did such a good job at de-emphasizing Garrett Cole's importance to this roster. Like, knowing how old he was getting and how much his arm was beat up. Like, you think about, like, the 2020 to 2022 Yankees, like, if Cole went down, that team was cooked, dude. They had nothing else after him. And it's like, since 2024, when we, like, even when he was hurt for the first half of that year, like, we made it through, and we got him back for the playoff. Like, I don't know. I think he's done a really good job with that.
No, I mean, whatever you give him, Garrett Cole feels like it could be a bonus because of how Cashman built this roster. No, I 100% agree. I mean, like, last year, like, I don't want to say you ever forgot about it, but last year, like, the expectation was to make it to the World Series, and you got to the playoffs, like, without him there. And they're, like, I don't know. And I think, like, guys like Cam Sliller, obviously, like, kind of coming on as strong as he did, and obviously, like, you know, Max Fried needed to be an ace, and Rodon bounced, like, having a really good year. Like, those things mattered. But you're right. I mean, I think that, honestly, like, when Cole gets back, it's going to be what we get from him is a bonus. I mean, the fact that last year, no Cole and Luis Gil was terrible, and you're still able to, I mean, damn near win the division. I think, yeah, you're right, Jacob.
I got also a question for you guys. So last year, like you just said, last year Schlittler was the guy who showed up in spring training. He was pumping gas. Everyone was like, whoa, where'd this come from? 2 years ago, it was Heal. In 2024, Heal showed up in, like, February, and he was throwing 100 with good movement. Who do you guys think will be the surprise, like, out of left field spring training velo riser this year?
I'm going to say Elmer, dude, because Elmer's a twig. Elmer's been a twig for a lot of his minor league career. He added 20 pounds, apparently, over the course of last year, and he dropped his arm angle significantly. So, new arm slot, new mechanics, new organization, adding weight throughout the year. I think there's a chance he's just more comfortable in his body throwing the way he's throwing now, and he's sitting 96 to 97 miles per hour, and he's topping 99, maybe hit 100 a couple times. Some of the adrenaline, like the World Baseball Classic, I know he's not pitching in spring training. I kind of got flamed for this because I was talking about him. I was like, he might debut this year, and we're going to see him in spring and all that. It's better that he's pitching in the World Baseball Classic. This is better. He's going to be pitching in games that actually matter. Like, this is a way better judgment of his pitchability. If he goes out there, like, I'm going to be in a weird situation. I don't think they're going to play I don't think they play in the same pool, but if Puerto Rico plays DR at any point in this tournament and Elmer's starting that game, I don't lose. There's no losing for me unless, like, DR loses in a blowout, like, in a slugfest. If Elmer throws four scoreless, I'm not going to be as mad as I normally would be. And I think if Elmer has, like, one good WBC start, like, he's not against a quality opponent, yeah, man. Like, I'm all in, dude. Like, this guy, I think he's going to show up throwing gas. Hess, I think, could show up throwing harder. And if Hess does show up throwing harder, his fastball shape, I think, is not talked about enough. I know TJ Stats, like, recently posted about Hess, and, like, TJ Stats is the only guy talking about Ben Hess, man. More people need to talk. That guy's fastball shape is disgusting. It's, like, a 5.5, 5.6 release, which is firmly, like, it's lower than average, and it's 18 inches vert. Like, that's stupid. That's disgusting. It shouldn't make sense.
He's fastball and then, like, a power curve, right?
Yep, he's got a changeup. The shape of the changeup is good. It's plus, like, it's, like, 13 inches vertical separation, and he's thrown a couple with, like, 20 inches horizontal. He's got a sweeper he's been messing around with. I think the arm slot just plays well for a sweeper, so if he gets a decent sweeper in there, he's fastball, sweeper, changeup, curveball, that's a good starting pitcher. I think if he shows up, He hit 99 in college. He just was throwing 92, 93 this past year. He's sitting, let's say he sits 94, 95 even. That guy will be a top 100 easy. Take it to the bank. So those are boring answers. I get it. But, you know, I like those.
Well, those are the two obvious answers. Just tricky because it's like, who's the out of nowhere, right?
Yeah. Well, I think with Schlittler, too, he was a top 20-ish prospect in the organization before spring training. He was top 15. Yeah. I think 13.
How hard was he throwing in spring, though?
He was throwing 95, which, like, remember, this was a jump for him.
Because he was 92 before that.
Yeah, he was, like, 92, 93 in 2024. And then he showed up in spring throwing, like, 95, 96. And everyone was like, whoa, what's going on? And then, like, it was, like, July, and he was throwing 98. And then they called him up, and he started throwing 100. So it was,
yeah,
like,
yeah, dude. Well, he threw 99 against Christian Campbell. And I was like, whoa, that's never been
that anywhere. Start against Wuchester was hilarious because he just, like, bitched Christian Campbell three times. Yeah. And well,
we should have seen the Red Sox thing coming. Yeah, it already wrote itself. Like,
I tweeted the video of Campbell striking out three times against Schlittler, and his brother liked it, and I was like, ah, shit.
Whose brother?
Campbell's brother.
You know where he's playing baseball at?
He's playing, where is he playing?
Ohio State.
Really?
Is he actually?
Yeah.
He's always said sorry. I didn't mean to be an asshole. I you know, let him know. Hit him up. Be like, hey, no. Man.
Don't say sorry.
Okay. I feel bad. I didn't want to like.
I love when brothers get involved. No, one time I called his brother. I said like, JSN was going to run like a 4.6, and his brother DM'd me and DM'd the show and said, "Would you want to bet on it?" I mean, I think he was playing for the Pirates at the time.
Yes, yeah. He was a former Yankee draft pick.
Yeah, he was. He was. Yeah.
He was in the Tyone trade.
He made it to the show, right?
Yes, like,
he was in the league.
Yes, he made it. He didn't spend a lot of time. It was a cup of coffee, but he got. You get there, man.
Cannon.
The cool thing about the JSN tie here is my little brother's a Seahawks fan, so he's having a rough week. This is a nervous week for him.
They'll be good.
Rough week. I wish I had that right now.
Well, I mean, like, in terms – I can't lie. I'm stressing.
They're going to
win. Don't stop. I can't say that. Stop.
Bro, fucking Pats are fake, dude.
Dude, Sam Darnold, first quarterback from that draft class to win a World Series, win a Super Bowl.
He's the first to get to one. Yeah, much like the first to win one.
All those MVPs, my guy Sam got the ring.
It's the Patriots. Nothing bad has ever happened to the New England Patriots.
No, dude. A couple of my closest friends, they went to Indiana and they're Patriots fans.
Nothing bad has happened to those people.
I'm like,
they're
you guys,
having a great year.
They're like, I was doing the math on this. They're like 16-3 in championships in their lives.
That's
16-3. It's something ridiculous like that. I'm like,
what are the teams they root for?
It's Patriots, Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins, and Indiana football. Like their only losses are like Celtics have never lost a championship in our lifetimes. I don't know if the Bruins have.
The Celtics lost to the Golden State.
Did they?
They lost the goal and the Lakers. Yes,
yeah,
and
the Celtics
Lakers
lost to the Lakers.
So they have two.
Yeah, so they got 16.
But they also watched literally one of the greatest basketball teams of all time and had zero threat of ever losing in that postseason.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great run. Like, you're just waiting basically a month to officially say you're champions. That's awesome, man. Like, this is what I mean by, like, stress. Like
the Red Sox are 4-0 as well. Like, it's
and you get to watch the 2018 Red Sox. You got to bitch your rivals and then proceed to have a pretty dominant ALCS and World Series victory.
Cheat their way to the World Series.
Nobody has it easier than the Boston sports fan.
That's ridiculous.
Got it easier.
No one's got it easier.
It's like Giants won twice in my lifetime when I was in diapers, and now I have to suffer for the rest of my life for it.
I was gonna say,
I was in middle school and high school for those, and I was loving it. I was,
peak of my life. Wasn't even a Giants fan, so.
You're rooting for the Browns.
Even a football fan. No, I didn't care about football. I only cared about baseball as a kid, and then I got into.
Wait, you were like 4 years old in 2011, so.
No. I was 7 years old. I was 7 years old. I was 4 years old, 3 years old for the first one. That's crazy. No, for the second one, I remember the second one happening.
You don't even remember the Green Bay versus Steelers Super Bowl.
Nah, not really.
That's wild.
Dude, I barely, like, the OBJ boat thing is, like, one of my first football memories.
Dude, that's crazy, dude.
Penn McAdoo and them.
Yeah, like,
was sick, too.
I will also say... I do think there's a funny parallel with the Yankees and the Giants here a little bit where, like, I see a lot of Yankee fans, like, constantly complain. Like, the state of the franchise is over, and it's like, I mean, the Giants are a little bit on the come up here because of Harbaugh. Harbaugh's great, and I'm, like, really excited about that hire and all that stuff, whatever. But, like, losing the standard is, like, what happened to the New York Giants, which is you just suck for a decade.
No, it's so funny. It's so funny to see these people who you root for the Giants and the Knicks for the Giants or the Jets and the Knicks for most of the year.
And then
Nets. they still find out no one roots for the Nets but me. I'm the only Nets fan in the world.
Jersey Nets fans
exist.
Dude,
I thought about yesterday when Jared Allen scored 40.
I was so happy for him, dude. I was like, what are you, like 40-16 and like
40-17, dude,
like,
in 30 minutes.
That's my GOAT, bro. I love this dude. I've always loved Jared Allen, bro. But yeah, it's like, I don't know how you're a New York sports fan, and you complain this much about the Yankees, knowing how much worse it can get in every other sport. It is absurd. Like, this team makes the playoffs every year, and you're complaining about Brian Cashman when you watch the Knicks. Like, the Knicks now are good, but for 20 of the last 24 years, they've been terrible. And the Giants and Jets have been terrible since, like, the early 2010s. And you're still complaining about the Yankees. It's mind-boggling to me.
I think this offseason is almost like a really good litmus test for what the Yankees are. I think it's kind of like very emblematic of the Yankee franchise right now, or the Yankee organization. The Yankees did good things this offseason. They brought back good players. They made good additions in their outfield. They didn't do everything you wanted, but there's still time for them to get there. And it's considered like a disaster. And I think it's kind of, it's really like, because they're not number one, which is a, if your standard is like, and I've said this on podcasts too, like, if you want the Yankees to always be number one and nothing and everything short of it is not good enough for you, that's fine. But I think we can at least acknowledge that your standard is not, your standard means that you don't like a good team. You just want in a World Series winner, which is fine. But I don't think in the conversation of like discourse, and also I don't think fans should be held to really any standards with this. I think this is for me more so like a, if you're talking with the game pretty seriously, or you're like, you're covering the game or whatever.
If you're in media, this is an in media standpoint.
Yeah. It's like, I'm just asked that, like, we can at least talk, we can have a line, or like we shouldn't blur the line between awful and just good. You know what I mean? Once we consider awful and good all in the same thing, because 29 teams that win a World Series, I think that's crazy, right?
If you think that we have to be the Dodgers for this to be a successful organization, then it's like you're never going to be happy until Hal sells the team to a hedge fund.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Just own it.
That's not a realistic way of thinking. You can never, like, it's literally just clickbait at that point to complain about every little thing to the extent that some of these people do. And I don't know. It's like, if they make a bad move, yeah, you're free to complain about them. But this offseason, they did pretty damn well.
Well, and a lot of it's to appease, like, there's, like, a clear divide in, like, the fandom entirely, right? Like, there are the people that, you know, want to be optimistic about everything, and the people that, like, want George to come back to life. And I think that, like, what you get is, like, media members that kind of pick a side and just go so far that way because they're interested in, like, kind of feeding their audience what they want to hear as opposed to, like, talking about things in a fair and reasonable way. I think that's kind of more what's happening.
And I think this is a good question to kind of wrap this specific segment. And it's, do you think the Yankees can win the World Series as currently constructed? No projecting future moves. As currently constructed, do you believe the New York Yankees can win the World Series? Not their favorites, but can they do it? Jacob, we'll start with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, 100% we can win the World Series. 100%. I think we are, if not the best team in the AL, we're in a pretty strong group, headlined by us, Toronto, and Seattle. Seattle just traded for Brendan Donovan like an hour before we started this pod. They're a really good team on paper. Obviously, Toronto had a pretty good offseason. And like what I've been saying, we had a pretty good offseason. So I think it's going to be one of those three teams representing the American League this year, if you ask me. And I don't know what more I can ask for. This team can definitely be that team. They could definitely, as long as they overcome those two in the postseason. So I think, yeah, we could. We absolutely could. As long as the cards fall our way in October.
I think they can. I think this team is a lot closer than people, I think, realize on the general fandom side of things. So, yeah, I think they can.
I will also challenge. So part of my answer is, yeah, like, my answer is yes. Are they the favorites? No. Is the degree of separation between them and the rest of the American League to my satisfaction, given the American League's quality? No. I will say, like, I'm a fan who, like, yeah, I think it's what makes the Yankees that they win the World Series. That's what makes the Yankees the Yankees. That is, I do subscribe a little bit to that theory. Subscribe to strong words. I do understand and there are parts of that theory that I buy into, but I'm not going to use that to then say, well, they're not number one, therefore they suck. Because that means that there are 29 bad teams every year. And I simply don't think that's how baseball works. Like, I don't think you shouldn't, as a baseball fan, appreciate the Blue Jays in 2025 for going from awful the year prior to on the precipice of winning a World Series. I don't think we should ignore the story of the 2024 Mets because they didn't win the World Series, or ignore the story of the 2023 Diamondbacks because they didn't win the World Series. Like, there are some incredible baseball stories.
2019 Yankees, baby.
Yeah, like, there are good baseball teams and baseball stories that just don't get the job done. That is sports. That's sports. That's life. There are really good things that don't end up being number one. You hope, and the Yankees, obviously, if they don't win a World Series under Aaron Judge, I think we'd all universally agree that's not, like, I don't think that's a success with Aaron Judge to have. It's a success to develop him and made him Aaron Judge, but it's not a success to have in the era. That's not a successful era of Yankee baseball.
Yeah, I think it's totally fair to like, retroactively look back at the 2021 to 2023 seasons and say, hey, they didn't build enough around him. They didn't build a good enough roster. Yeah. And it's like, I think that's, yeah, totally, like, there's a ton of holes on a lot of those teams that, like, some of them were present going into the year and just weren't addressed. So it's totally fair to look back in retrospect and say, hey, they didn't do enough some of these years. But I mean, 2017 to 2020, they were legitimate contenders each one of those seasons. 24 and 25, they're legitimate contenders. Right now, going into this year, they're legitimate contenders. So it's like, if like Judge winning one should happen, we should do it eventually with him. But I mean, he's had the opportunities now, and it's like, it's up to him and the other guys in this locker room to go out and show up this October, because they're going to be in the position to win as long as they execute.
They're a really good team. They're a good team capable of being a really good team. And I hope, I mean, obviously you hope that they're a really good team. You hope everything kind of breaks their way. And I think they're capable. I think they're capable. I have trust that the lineup is going to hit. Their worst player right now in the projected 26-man roster is probably Oswaldo Cabrera, JC Ascara. I tweeted this out before we started doing this. I completely forgot that we were like legit. People were legitimately talking about Everson Perera as like the right-handed bat for this team this time last year. Oswald Peraza only beat out, only made the roster because of an injury, I think, to DJ LeMahieu, because Pablo Reyes was beating him in spring training. I want you to hear this, though.
Yeah.
Pablo Reyes and Oswald Peraza were fighting for a lineup spot or a roster spot. Oswald Peraza, your former top prospect, was losing, and both of them made the roster because not because somebody good went down, because DJ LeMahieu, who's playing hockey right now to get his legs right, like, good for him, but like, he's not in good shape to move laterally. That was what opened the door for all. These are names that would not exist on this current roster, is kind of my point.
And that was my point about where you're heading into this opening day versus last. I mean, like, literally, dude, the broadcast did a whole big thing about how much, you know, Max Fried values defense, and then just you watch Pablo Reyes kick ground ball after ground ball at third that same start. So, yeah, like, yeah, like, those guys would never play this year for the Yankees.
Do you guys remember when Oswald Peraza was just asked directly to his face, like, why are you a failure, essentially?
That was a crazy question.
That was insane. I remember that.
But that's New York media, dude. Like,
what did he say? He was like, how does it feel that your career has been underwhelming so far?
Something of that point. Yeah, like, yeah. And that you're going to lose your job.
Yeah, how's it
feel? That's what he was saying.
It's been underwhelming, and you're not going to be here because of it or something like
that.
Dude, it's like mid-July. He hadn't had a hit in like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. He was starting every day, and he's like stinking it up. I felt terrible for him. Like,
I did feel bad too, but like, that's how bad things got in that third base room.
It's kind of crazy that the Angels just like started him for like a month and a half.
They played him at first base.
No, like, all due respect to the man, he did pitch multiple times. But I'm sure he's a great guy. The guy is just not a big league hitter, man. He's just not. And I cannot comprehend how he played 71 major league games last year.
It's again all the conversation about Yankees. When we talk about this roster, and this team does not, I think you should judge a roster a good bit by their worst player. Like, I just think you should. I don't think, not to say that your worst player defines you entirely, but you should judge him a little bit on that. Like, how is this guy on your roster if your roster is good?
And you think about last year, right? Like, Peraza played 71 games for us. You had Cabrera started for the whole first month and a half until he got hurt. You had DJ played, what, like 40, 50 games? And then you had Volpe, because we had no backup shortstop. Volpe played 156 games or whatever with the fucked up shoulder. So it's like, all these problems are not present with this current roster. This is a serious issue with that left side of the infield last year. Serious issue. And that's not there anymore. Even though people will say, oh, Ryan McMahon is below average with the bat. It's like, I don't care. He's going to be a 2 to 2.5 WAR player this year, which is much better than what we got for most of our third base at-bats last year.
The left side of the infield isn't going to win any awards, but the left side of the infield, maybe they won a gold glove. Maybe McMahon wins a gold glove. Maybe. But it's not going to, like, you know, you're not going to write stories about how incredible that left side of the infield is, but that left side of the infield is, it's a pretty, like, high probability that you get 2 wins above replacement out of a starter at both positions.
Yes, it's a stable group now.
I'm giving this take out. This is almost unprompted, but I thought about this in the car ride to school this morning, and I have to say it because I want somebody to hear it. I want you guys to hear it. I don't think Anthony Volpe is a great baseball player. I don't want to preface that, but for all of the shit he gets and all the discourse about how the outfield is quote unquote mismanaged and they shouldn't have brought Christian back, they should just let Dominguez play. There isn't a single GM in baseball who would bet on Dominguez putting up 3 WAR before they'd bet on Volpe putting up 3 WAR in a season. And I understand part of that is that Volpe's a shortstop.
Shortstop being a part of it.
But, like, that's part of the value. That's like saying, well, Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback and this guy's a running back. Like, that's part of it. That has to be part of the conversation, no? Like, that's part of your skill set.
No, I'm sure right.
I think people conflate Volpe and Caballero, Volpe being a disappointing prospect and like Caballero being a utility man with like, oh, these guys are just buns. Like, this is the same as Oswald Peraza out there. I think people need to like recognize the difference between turbo dog shit and just like not inspiring baseball, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, Volpe in 2024, even when he couldn't hit for half the season, was still, a 3.5 WAR player? Like, he's productive. That's all that matters at the end of the day, is getting production out of every spot. And as much as shit as he gets, like, he wasn't good this past year, of course. Everyone saw it with the, especially on the defensive side. When he was hurt, he very clearly couldn't feel the ball going to his right because his arm was so messed up. But I don't know. I think if he comes back and he's actually healthy and he's going to have a chance to win the shortstop job back, and I think he'll be pretty damn good, at least on defense, and hopefully he'll take some strides on offense that we've been waiting for since pretty much he was a rookie.
I have no faith in the offense. I just hope his glove is good.
The reason I have faith in the offense is before he was hurt this past year,
dude, he was
really
putting
good.
It together. Just say it, Jacob. He was really putting it together.
For the first 6 weeks of the season, he had really good metrics. He had really good surface level numbers, and the metrics backed it up. Then he got hurt, and then all of June he was terrible. All of July he was terrible. Then he had the cortisone shot. Then two, three weeks after the All-Star break, when he got the cortisone shot, he was crushing the ball. He had like 8 home runs in the first 2 weeks after the All-Star break. And then it's unfortunate that the season went that way, that we had to force him into the lineup every day when he clearly wasn't healthy. But like, we haven't gotten 2025, we barely saw him healthy. And when he was healthy, when he wasn't in pain, he played well. He hit well.
I just don't buy it. I don't know. That's just me.
I would be happy with a return to 2024's offense from him.
I'm just hoping for a good defense. That's really it. Like,
listen, I've said this the entire time for the last like 3 years. He reminds me so much of a young Dansby Swanson. Look at Dansby's like first 4 years in the show when he wasn't hitting. The defense was good, but it wasn't as good as Volpe's in 2024. The metrics overall look kind of similar. He's like a .230 hitter with mediocre power. The walks and strikeouts were kind of similar to what Volpe did this past year. Like, I don't know. I think it's not the worst comp in the world.
If he puts up a 90 OPS plus, that being Volpe, like, I'll take that. I'll take that tomorrow.
But Swanson didn't give you a 90 OPS plus to what year?
Year 4.
Year 4.
He was the first year
he wasn't terrible at hitting.
Oh yeah, his only OPS plus. I mean, his 89 OPS plus year was the juice ball year.
Yeah.
I think this roster doesn't have like a clearly they don't have a non-big leaguer. They have a lot of every single person on this position player side of things belongs in the big leagues.
Regardless of how we feel about Volpe's future, he's still like a starting caliber player.
Oh, 100%.
Like, when he's healthy, when he's right, he's still like, he's not exactly like you're saying, he's not a Peraza. He's not a negative when he's out there.
I like this Swanson comp a lot, Jacob.
Yeah, I've been saying it for years, man.
Well, my bad.
I've been saying it for years.
And also, if you
year five breakout's gonna happen.
Yeah, dude, I'm in. Give me year 5 Volpe.
I'll take it.
Dansby was literally not a good hitter until age 26. That's all I'm saying.
I think again, when it comes to Volpe, can he just be like close enough to league average where the glove and the speed make it so he's a very quality big leaguer? I think it's definitely possible. I do think also this ties into the bench bat thing. Like, we're talking about how like this position player group is coming together pretty well, and they're still searching for more. I'm pretty excited if they end up getting another bench bat, because I think this offense is infallible. Like, I understand you can't, like, the games have to be played, and like, baseball's a high variance enough sport where a really good, you know, things that players that should be good can be bad, and players that should be bad can be good. Like, I get that. if they get like Paul Goldschmidt and Ben Rice can catch against lefties, you cannot find a hole in this offense. I'm sorry. This offense is going to mash. They're going to score a million runs and they're going to have, they're going to be awesome, man. They're going to be so freaking good. I know that that sounds like a crazy thing to say considering it's Paul fucking Goldschmidt, but no, look, against lefties, you put Goldschmidt in that versus lefties lineup. God, that lineup is just so good. And the lineup versus righties is already pretty good. Your worst hitter against righties is shortstop, Cabrera or Volpe. And that's your only like bad hitter against righties. Your only not good hitter against lefties is Trent Grisham. Jazz and Rice are kind of average in those situations, but everyone else absolutely kills lefties for the most part. That is disgusting. That is disgusting to me. Now, I think it's contingent on like whether Rice can actually catch or not, but I kind of want to get your fat guy's thoughts on this. We'll start with Chris and then Jacob. I know you have like a power ranking you have going, so I want to let you kind of get the limelight after. Chris, is there like a bench bat specifically that you want, and is there a position you would really want it to be at?
I'm going to defer to both of you guys on this bench bat topic.
Jacob, let it rip, man. Let it rip.
What I did was I pulled up a list of 11 names here that are, it's going to be 1 year guys. You can sign them to platoon for 1 year. It's veteran guys who are going to be cheap, like 1 year, $5 million or less. And I sorted them over the last three seasons of ex-Woba versus left-handed pitchers. I frankly don't care about position that much. I think we have versatility in what we have so far. So if we want to add a bat against lefties, I think we should just go with the best bat. That the caveat being that it can't be someone that's purely a DH. It has to be someone that can play somewhere. Yeah. Otherwise, I think Marcell Ozuna would be a decent guy to look at, but he literally can't play the field, so
Incredible driver. He is one of the greatest drivers we have ever seen.
Jeez.
Sorry.
All right. I don't know if he was probably driving with the Luis Severino strikeout rate, blood alcohol content, but...
He's coughing up a storm over there.
I'm going to pass out.
The laughing cough.
Yeah, but... So I got this list of 11 names here.
Okay, who you got?
And there's a group of three that are above the rest, and it's Paul Goldschmidt's number one. I think if we're going to get a righty platoon bat, it should be Goldschmidt, especially since he was here this year. It seemed like he enjoyed his time. It seems like he understands his role, and it seems like he's a good leader. I think Goldschmidt makes the most sense by far to bring back. After him, Randall Grichuk and Tommy Pham are both good options. Both can play some outfield, probably not well, but both can play some outfield, left field, or right field. And Grichuk does have a higher ex-WOBA than Pham over the last 3 years against lefties. But the reason I like Pham the most, his numbers last year, after he got his contact prescription fixed, it was like June 20th, or so. I've tweeted about this many times. I forget the exact date. After like June 20th or 21st, whenever he got his contacts fixed, he had like a 390 ex-WOBA. He had like a 17. It is ridiculous numbers. I'm going to try to pull up this tweet that I tweeted. Because it was like night and day for him. He was having a terrible season, and then he fixed it all. All right, here we go. After June 22nd. I tweeted this in like late August, so this is probably the numbers at the end weren't the same, but from like June 22nd to August 20th, he was slashing 333, 394, 532 with a 153 WRC plus, 10% walk rate, 17% strikeout rate, 95 mile per hour average EV, 400 ex-WOBA.
Is that like post-LASIK Jameis Winston?
Yes, it's literally, they fixed his eyes and he was ridiculous after. He was hitting everything. So it's like, I know the issue with Pham that people probably have is that he's quite eccentric, we'll say.
You could say he's a psycho,
He's had his fights, he's had his stabbings outside of clubs, but...
In terms of
the player, like, if he wants to come and play in New York, and he's, like, I'm sure he's going to be happy with a more side character role on this type of roster that gives him a chance to contend. Hey, I mean, I'd take that all day. Like that, just the talent is still ridiculous when he's seeing the ball right. So I would take that gamble with that last roster spot.
You had like an 830 expected OPS against lefties last year. And I know, again, I'm going to get a lot of flack for this because I've talked up expected OPS so much. And it's not because I think like ex-WOBA sucks. I think it's just ex-OPS is just easier to understand for the casual fan. you can get unlucky, really unlucky, in like 100 plate appearances in a year. If you basically play COVID samples, have COVID volume, I don't care about your results. I don't. I just don't. He had a batting average on bowls in play against lefties of, where is this thing? I put batting average. Sorry. His batting average on bowls in play against lefties last year was 247. That's not sustainable. So I agree that Goldschmidt's my number one, because I just think the upside of like no Wells, but have Grisham against lefties and having Goldschmidt in there over really anybody else I can think of on the marketplace is a bigger swing than any other position. But I'll take any right-handed bat. Like, if it's an outfielder, it is what it is. If it's a first baseman, it is what it is. As long as it doesn't affect Ben Rice's playing time. Are we in agreement on that? I don't want Ben Rice to sit a bunch.
Yes, I agree. I think the other interesting name, my last interesting name would be Gary Sanchez. My idol, my muse, Gary Sanchez. I think that would be more of a, because he was hurt most last year, that would be more of like a minor league contract with the spring training invite. And I think, like, we do need depth at the catcher position, so I would take that just for the depth and having a righty at the position. And it's like, who knows? Maybe he has a good spring, beats out J.C. Ascaro for that backup catcher role, and then we have a more balanced catcher position. And then with J.C., we could stash him in AAA or trade him for a good reliever. Who knows?
They also need another, like, catcher who can play a lot. This is kind of like, do you remember when Carlos Narvaez got a lot of run in 23 because Trevino or Higgy was in the World Baseball Classic? This is kind of similar to that, where you're going to need to get a catcher who can play a ton for you in spring training, and you're not going to catch Ben Rice every day. You're going to catch Ascaro pretty frequently. You kind of want to have somebody who can, like, you know, somebody can actually really compete, because Wells is going to be playing in the World Baseball Classic. So, and because he's going to be on DR, he's going to be there the entire time because they're going to win it all. So, like, he's going to be stuck in, you know, the World Baseball Classic for a good bit.
Get in there.
But my point is, unironically, like, you're going to need another catcher who can catch pretty frequently. And no disrespect to, like, Ali Sanchez. I don't think Ali Sanchez will ever be somebody I want on the big league roster. I'm not, like, big on Gary. Like, I think Ben Rice serves that role, like, way better. But, like, why not? No one has signed him, so why not? Like, if he signs a minor league deal, the spring training invite, and, like, what's the harm?
I just need him to hit, like, one 480-foot bomb.
Especially in spring training. I feel like the ball sounds so nice during spring training. Oh, my God,
just, like, that crack of that bat.
Do you remember?
You know, he's going to be feast off, like, some like, 19-year-old in March 2nd. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I can see it now in my head.
Do you, Seeing him in the Navy jersey again, man, like, that's going to make me tear up.
It'd be like 2015 all over again.
Yeah, and I will say this. I think a lot of people miscategorize Gary Sanchez as being, like, the lazy one or, like, the not hard. I think Gary Sanchez is one of the baby bombers who I think had the right attitude. I think he had the attitude. I mean, I think, like, he went about it the right
Blake
way.
Blake Snell, like, a few years ago, told everyone. He was like, yeah, Gary is the reason, like, part of the reason why I won Cy Young. Like, he came to the Padres, and he was like, he worked with me so well. He was Snell's personal catcher. Like, he worked with him so well that it turned Snell's season around.
He won a Cy Young, right? Isn't that what happened?
He had, like, a 5.30 ERA before Gary joined the team, too. And then Gary also hit, like, 20 homers that year because he's mashing against lefties.
And if he sucks, guess what? You just don't put him on the big league.
Yeah. It's literally no risk. And the reward you get is you get to see Gary back in pinstripes. So it's like that's priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens there. But I do think, like, find more right-handed bats. Let's see what ends up happening. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap things here?
I'm against Andujar. Miguel Andujar's metrics just aren't good.
The Dewey's due, bro.
You don't even flow in that one. And he's just, like, somehow an even worse defender than Gary while also being a worse hitter than Gary. So it's like, if you're going to go with the nostalgia factor, it's got to be Gary over Andujar.
Get me the Dew and the Gare Bear. Get me both. Why not both? Get me the Dew. The Dew is Dew, bro.
All right, we're getting greedy.
Nah, we need just you know what? Get Glaber to waive the no-trade clause on his QO. Bring him in. Bring it. You need a right-handed. You could use a right-handed second baseman maybe somewhere.
Man is still out there.
Honestly, yeah. Screw it, dude. Screw it. Let's bring up Mike Talk.
Too many lefties.
Wait. Doesn't Mike Talk hit lefties? Am I crazy on that? Hold on.
Does he have reverse splits?
Hold on. I don't know if it's reverse splits, but I don't think it's like Stark splits is the whole thing. Career 104 WRC plus, last year 121 WRC plus, 776 OPS, year prior 105, year before that 107. Yep, so Sockman, The Dew, Big Gary, the Sanchez. I think it's more Mark Sanchez's nickname, but Gary, I'm going
to
give it
to. Gary's cool. Give it to Gary.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, Gary Sanchez is objectively a cooler New York sports athlete than Mark Sanchez.
Dude, I just pulled up when he took Matt Boyd 490 in Detroit.
Dude, oh, in Detroit? Jesus. Dude, that was so sick.
I don't know why. I just have a vivid memory. Like, when you guys start
former future Yankee Matt Boyd.
I swear to God, that was like April or something. It was like freezing in Detroit, too, and he still popped it like 490. I was like, I don't know how he did that. The ball was definitely not carrying, and he still put it 490.
Dude, 490, bro, just like detonated, bro. Top.
Do you remember the one he hit in San Francisco, like really early in 2019, where it was just absolutely nuked? Like, he just absolutely killed that one. I forget who it was off of, but he just killed the ball in San Francisco, and dude, I remember
it was
that
off of Derek Holland.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right. And you've got, you know,
other one 2018? I'm trying to pull it up.
I think it was 2017. 2017. Yep, it was 2017.
Oh, 2018, his first home run 2018 was off of E-Rod in the playoffs against Boston.
Oh,
where
he put it
onto Lansdowne Street in, like, center field.
Oh.
Yes.
That was a nuke, dude.
My favorite Gary home run might be in the regular season, I think, is the one he hit as a pinch hitter in Toronto. Because that ball just, dude, that is like a straight, the camera angle does it such justice as well. They zoom out so far and you can't even see the baseball and it goes into the fucking road. Oh, man, dude, we're nostalgic. This podcast has been like 40% bullshitting and 60% Yankee talk.
This is just this Yankee sicko pod right now.
You know what it was? The Gary Sanchez, the home run he hit off of Boyd. I'm pretty sure that was the same series where we fought them.
Yes.
We brawled. It was like Miguel Cabrera and Austin Romine were going at it. And Gary was like taking shots at someone on the ground. He was giving cheap shots. And the next day, he takes Boyd like 500 feet or something.
Yeah, dude.
Just another fuck you to them. That was awesome.
493.
Oh, dude. Jesus
Christ.
2017 team was so sick, dude.
Well, oh, hey, God. Here's the hoping, man. Shout out the grand slam he hit against the Orioles in that game that we lost in because Andrew Heaney existed. Bring back in. Oh, wait, he retired. He retired. We can't bring him back.
Remember, yeah, he hit didn't he hit a walk-off against the Mets in the COVID year? Like when he couldn't hit anything that year, and then he like
yes. He hit like a grand slam.
Eighth at home, top of the eighth, because it was weird COVID.
Yes, and Amedo Rosario walked us off, and I actually almost like that was the most angry I've ever been. I almost if it wasn't for the fact that I bought my monitor,
that was
the most angry
you've ever been.
Honestly, yeah. For
August
some reason, that pissed
2020
me. Yeah,
game really.
Yeah, that and well, there's two like piff. I don't. Okay, the postseason for me is like there's part of it being like it being over is kind of nice. Now that
this
for a job.
No, I understand. I understand that like the idea of the postseason is more like you're sad than
Red Sox.
I have a regular season one that's so much worse than this.
Which one?
Oh, you're gonna be pissed when you remember this. I think it was 2022
uh-huh.
series where it's in August when the team was kind of falling apart. We're in Seattle.
Oh my god.
Mid-August, we're on like an 8 or 9 game losing streak. We go to extra innings in Seattle. It's like, I think it was pre-pitch clock too, so it's like 1:30 a.m.
Dude, I let myself like forget this game happened.
So what was the sequence again? Like, IKF got picked off at second.
Yeah.
And then he got picked off at second again the following inning as the ghost runner or something. He made 2 outs on the bases in consecutive innings, one of them being as the ghost runner. That's all I remember.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're 100% right.
I tweeted some nasty
things.
Well,
the thing is, I think the one thing that kept me from like going crazy is that it was so late in that game. The Mets one for some reason just got me. I really hated Aroldis Chapman. Like, okay, I had become like conscious enough in my life to like know that Aroldis Chapman was a bad person. So like I really didn't like Aroldis Chapman, and I was like, dude, you cannot. I'm like, bro, you just can't blow this one. Like we need this one. Like where they were struggling a little bit. Like you need this one. When he gave up that home run, dude, like I was like I there was just a rage in me. Shout out Chad Green for on the like one of the worst days of my life. Shout out Chad Green giving up a walk-off home run to Altuve. Shout out you, bro. You're the man.
That's the day after the Garrett Cole masterclass, right?
That's why I couldn't really be that mad. Like, you know, even in life, you know, in general.
I think we were about to sweep them.
Yes.
And that, and we're just like, oh, we were struggling all that first half. They were like, oh, we're about to sweep them going to the All-Star break. Bro. And then it just killed all the momentum again. It was like,
I couldn't be that mad at Chad Green because, number one, man, like, he's a good dude. And number two, that Garrett Cole game is like a top 10 regular season game of the Baby Bomber era, easily. Top five, maybe. Like, that game was...
Dude, he threw like 130 pitches.
That's, and
like,
he asked for the ball.
I don't think anyone will ever have that type of performance again. Like, no, they're not. They just don't let you do that these days. That's
baseball,
before Booty went woke, bro.
In the United States, they tell pitchers you have to. They only let pitchers go into the fifth inning. I forget. It's like the North Korea meme. Can't do it though. I don't know the line. I don't have it. Anywho,
in America, they make you pitch five innings and leave.
In America, they make you watch five pitching changes a game, and I need Garrett Cole back on the mound. But
Sanchez back. I'm fully bought into the Gary Sanchez agenda.
Like, I'm just like watching every Gary Sanchez nuke right now. Just
I was honestly
majestic, dude.
I was giving you points while I was like clicking on Savant, just going like open a new tab.
Dude, as you guys are going, I'm just like I had the one against the Red Sox pulled up in the playoffs in the ALDS.
Oh my god, it's so ridiculous how far he hits that one.
Do you remember his opening day 2021?
479, dude. Like,
I think he hit two home runs in that game too.
Yeah, he had two, but this one was the 479er top of the seventh.
Yeah, it's his second homer of the game to fucking put the nail in the coffin for this game.
Yeah, dude. Literally, like,
he's the only guy who showed up in that series. Damn.
Yeah, I do remember. I'm going live very soon, so I do have to wrap here.
Yeah, no, you were. Just, I mean,
yeah,
honestly, we're just,
I totally forgot. I have no sense of time. That's okay, guys. If you're listening to this at this point in the podcast, like you're a real one. We really appreciate
our best
your support.
If you're listening,
you really sat through like at least 30 minutes of just either my velocity, Jacob's velocity, Chris's velocity, or whatever bullshit we're on.
I mean, think about today's pod. Coffee. We got Ryan Manosphere. We got blood alcohol levels and driving.
It was a good one for sure.
We got some gambling talk. We got the Gary Sanchez talk. Like, this was it. This was the most complete pod.
This is one of our... Yeah, this is one of the most complete pods you could ever have.
Yeah.
This is it, fellas. Well, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in here on Fireside Yankees. You guys can check us out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, this YouTube page. You can also... check out our website, empiresportsmedia.com. I want to shout out Jacob, and as he runs the And That's Baseball YouTube channel. You can check that out. And Chris, who has Dead Air Sports. And
no,
also,
do not shout that
hold
out.
Hold on. No, I was about to get there. I'm getting to the Fireside Baseball part. He does the Notebooks or Fireside Baseball. He's always talking about the most relevant things and the most relevant discussions in the baseball world. I think it's a really fun video archetype, and you guys should check those out. And we've got a podcast coming out later this week for Fireside Baseball. We're going to talk about a lot of baseball topics. So we'll link all these channels in the description below. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Perfect.